very happy new year for tomorrow and the eternity to follow. We know that in our spiritual self there is no new year, for we are told that eternity already is. The I is not experiencing a new year. The I is our identity. And so we know that in time we're merely living out our concept of the I. And if it's a limited concept, it's a limited life. As the concept is lessened from the mortal sense and the spiritual enters, we find that we're not living in a year or in a physical form, but we are life itself. Now, in the 20th chapter of John, it's safe to say that there's very little in it that the world is known about. It can trace the footsteps. It can say he is risen. But I'm quite sure you'll agree that even we, who have studied this long and hard, could not understand this particular chapter unless we had had a full preparation for it. And we have had that preparation. And for that reason today, we can look at the experience of Mary Magdalene, of the disciples, and especially of Thomas, and we can see things that have never really been revealed to the minds of the millions who walk this earth, who have studied this Bible. As a matter of fact, as we enter certain levels of this chapter, you're going to find that you don't have a place where you can hold on. There's no sure footprint to follow. You'll have to walk in your own spiritual footpath. You'll have to find your own invisible way. And in a sense, Mary Magdalene is leading us now, because she is going to do something very strange. Peter ran into the tomb. Peter saw there was no body. Peter saw grave clothes and a napkin. And then Peter believed that Jesus Christ had risen. And then he went home. Went back to his material consciousness. Now Mary had announced that Jesus wasn't in the tomb. She was the first woman disciple to know this, before the men. But now she doesn't go home. Something rivets her right to the spot she won't leave. So as we pick Mary up here in the 11th verse, Mary stood without at the sepulchre, weeping. And as she wept, she stooped down and looked into the sepulchre. Seeth two angels in white sitting, one at the head, the other at the feet, where the body of Jesus had lain. Now there's going to come a time in the life of every person here when we go through this experience, if we have not already done so. Something is going to say to us, you're ready for a new level. You're ready to let go of what you thought you were. You're ready to ascend to the self that you are. You're ready to be restored to your own reality. And that happens when, like Mary, we're willing to weep. She could have gone home. She could have said, he isn't there. But you know that his not being in the tomb was not the cause of her weeping. This would rather be a cause for rejoicing. It would seem that weeping means quite a bit more than human sorrow. Humanly, she would have said, "Why, he's not here. How wonderful. He's risen." But instead, she's weeping. And that is because Mary has seen something that Peter could not see. Mary is weeping means the Christ in Mary is weeping for her recognition. The Christ in Mary is weeping to lead her into conscious union with the infinite. And Mary is standing fast. Something in her tells her that Christ is near. She doesn't assume that he is risen in a physical form. She is really now in an inner experience. And all that is within her is saying, Christ is right near. You're almost breaking through into Christ consciousness. She is weeping for union with Christ. Now, Mary at this point represents the entire will of an individual. When the will of you is weeping for Christ, weeping for truth alone, you'll find you're standing not in the tomb, but outside. In the tomb, you will be bound by your sense perception. Outside the tomb means that Mary is outside sense perception. She is transcending her senses. She is not imprisoned within the senses. You'll recall that John did a strange thing. When he outran Peter to the tomb, John did not go in. Peter did. Mary is now doing the same thing. Before she goes into the tomb to look, to investigate, she stands outside. And this is the procedure which is called living outside the body image. This is the high esoteric teaching at this point, that before you enter any place in this world, you must learn to remember that you cannot enter as a physical form. The moment you enter anywhere, even this room, as a physical form, you have come in a state of duality. You are a divided consciousness. Mary could not enter that tomb until she had first found her inner self. And so she was weeping to find the inner Christ. She was soul searching. She was reaching out beyond the mind, refusing to accept what the mind saw. And because of it, as she rests within herself, knowing that I am not in this form, I am not living in this physical body, I am the Spirit of the Father. She is outside the tomb, the sepulchre called body. She is outside the concept of mortal life. And only when she establishes that is she ready now to look inside. And she does that. She does it, and the procedure is called stooping and looking. She stoops and she looks. When she stoops, she is expressing that humility of there is no person here called Mary. When she looks, because she has already stooped, because she has obliterated personal sense, when she looks, she is looking with the inner eye, not with the outer eye. Peter ran in with the outer eye. He saw the grave clothes. Mary comes in with the inner eye and sees not the grave clothes at all, but two angels. And John is showing us the difference between the personal sense of loss experienced by Peter, who lives in material consciousness, and the high transcendental awareness of Mary Magdalene, who lives by divine will and love. Divine will in her is expressing its wholeness, and it shows forth to her as two angels, one at the head and one at the feet, where the body of Jesus had lain. Now, these two angels are not visible to human eyes. They are divine communications. They appear only to the inner self. Mary is introducing the world at this point to the great truth that beside the five senses of the physical nature, we have the senses of the soul, which can perceive that which is invisible to and untouchable by the human senses. Mary had achieved the inner senses, and with the inner senses, she is now able to discern those qualities of the spirit which are unknown to the mind of man, but not to John, who had already been in that tomb long before he arrived at the tomb. John, who had already transcended his personal self, who made way for Peter to show us the distinction between one who knows the spirit and one who knows the flesh. The angels represent many things. The two, one at the head, one at the foot, is expressive of the total regeneration, the whole man regenerate from head to foot. And the last has returned to the first, so that first and last are now one. I am the beginning and the end, the Alpha and the Omega. This is the sign that one has returned to one's pre-existent self. And these two angels further tell us a secret that will only develop in the 20th chapter as we go along through it very carefully. We will see it as a sign of two different kinds of bodies that are going to be presented to us. One might be called a spiritual body, and another a still higher body called a celestial body. The two angels are a promise of new developments to come. They are the sign that Mary, within herself now, is being Christed. It hasn't fully happened, but she has opened the way by her weeping, which is yearning for Christ consciousness, putting Christ first, last, and always, so that there is no personal Mary there. There is only the desire to live in Christ. Blessed are they that mourn. This weeping and this mourning are one and the same. Those who are ready to be dead to that self which is not are mourning, and ready to be alive to that self which is are weeping for reunion with Christ. And they shall be comforted. They shall receive the Holy Ghost, the Comforter. And Mary will receive the Comforter. Now she turns outside. The angels have said to her, "Why weepest thou?" And she says, "They have taken my Lord away." She cannot find the full expression of Christ within herself. But she lingers. Something holds her there. This inner communion with the angels of the Father within is an experience in which you know you are on the path of truth. Within you is the complete, total awareness that I am now being guided. And in a moment, an eternal moment, something will open up, a new horizon, a new consciousness, a new age. I will be lifted up into the seventh heaven. When she goes outside the tomb now, she sees one, but she can't quite tell who it is. This is that in-between state now, when we're coming closer to Christ consciousness, but have not yet been fully lifted up to perceive the Christ of our own being. We may feel the presence of the Spirit without any specific identification. And again comes the question, why weepest thou? But this time it comes from this vision that she sees in the garden. They have taken my Lord away. And then comes the word Mary. That's all he says, Mary. And as that word is spoken, this is the Christing of Mary. This is Christ within her, recognizing her entire being. When Christ within you speaks your name, Christ knows you. And in the moment that Christ knows you, you have the capacity to know Christ. As we are known by the Christ, we can know the Christ. In that breathless moment, when she hears the word Mary, her entire being is being Christed, and her recognition of this is her response, Rabboni. Master. She recognizes the Christ of her being. It would appear, as you read this, that she sees Jesus in the garden and recognizes him to be the Christ. But this is the inner experience of Mary in which she recognizes Christ within herself. She may not know she has found Christ within herself. She still thinks this is a person out there. But she has seen the incorporeal Christ, the incorporeal man. She swept with ecstasy. She wishes to throw herself at his feet and embrace him, to clasp his knees to her. But he says, touch me not. I have not yet ascended. And again, this would seem to mean that Jesus the Christ had not yet ascended. But it doesn't mean that at all. It means that I, in the midst of you, have not yet ascended. I have not been fully lifted up within your consciousness. If you still want to touch me, if you still think I am a person out here to be touched, and Christ is telling us all at this moment, I am incorporeal being in the midst of you. Do not be deceived by the senses again. Do not reach out to touch that which is within yourself. Do not fall back into the deception of the physical senses. You have found Christ in you, not outside you. And so, know the incorporeal Christ of your own being, and that will be the ascension. Do not reach out and touch. I cannot be touched. That would be an illusion. I am not yet fully ascended in your consciousness. And I will not be until you overcome the illusion that you must touch that which you seem to think is out there. Mary was finding her own Christ self, but not yet fully aware of that. Till the Master says, touch me now. There is still inner communion until total oneness is attained. Now then, Christ will appear within you one day, but only after you have prepared yourself. And then Christ will reappear, perhaps many times. And finally, there will come the moment when the Christ who appears within you will be accepted by you as the self of the universe, as the self of your being, and not as a separate individual from your own self. When you know that, when you have been so favored to receive that inner bestowal, that the Christ within you that you see with the inner eye is known to be but an image in your consciousness of your own infinite being, then you will have passed the point of touch me not, for I have not yet ascended. And we must pass that point. This inner illumination is the end of the quest. Now think back, those of you who have witnessed the Christ within, those of you who have had the voice within, and see that here, Mary is giving you a lesson. She's being used to teach you that the voice of the Christ that she hears in the garden is an inner voice. And Mary is taking us way back to the Garden of Eden, where Adam and Eve, the unchristed, living in the garden, were unaware of the invisible Christ. Mary in the garden finds the invisible Christ. And this is the revelation that all mankind is incorporeal. That Christ is the invisible, incorporeal self of mankind. And that the world living now is in the Garden of Eden, unaware of it. It is miserable in the Garden of Eden, still listening to the serpent, still listening to mortal mind, when invisibly, to those who have made the preparation, Christ is present and can be experienced as divine selfhood. We are walking in that garden now. We have always been walking in it. But we have not stopped, we have not wept, we have not stooped, we have not looked, we have not listened, we have not discerned, because we have not yet developed the will to love God and only God within. This will, this living, active will, is Mary Magdalene in you. As you accept this will in you to know only God aright, first, last, and foremost, you will find you are aided to rest, to be meek unto the inner spirit, to have the inner eye open. To be lifted out of and above the five senses of the mind. To witness the incorporeal nature of all life. And finally, to know it is you. And where did it all begin with Mary? When she was cast at the Master's feet as a sinner. Told to be stoned. But the Master had seen her incorporeality, and now she is seeing her own incorporeality. The cycle is complete. She never was what the world thought, and no one is. And so, as we accept the will to know only God in ourselves, in everyone we meet, we are staying outside the senses, outside the sepulcher, outside the tomb of matter, outside the tomb of mortal life, resting in the word that the invisible Christ is here in the garden, ever present, always present. And we are weeping for conscious union with that Christ. Until the Christ says, why weepest thou? Until that voice opens the heart. The angels had searched the heart of Mary for her motives. They were found to be pure. Her inner goodness enabled her to receive the awareness of the inner self. Mary wasn't seeking anything of the world. Nothing. Mary wasn't seeking anything from Mary. Mary was seeking Christ's salvation. Mary was seeking divine truth. And Mary obtains that which she is seeking because her motives are 100% pure. Now she is told to go. Go to my brethren. Tell them what you've seen. Tell them that I go to your Father and my Father, to your God and my God. He emphasizes Father. He emphasizes God. Because Mary had called him Rabboni, which means my master. He's telling her, I'm not your master. I am yourself. And tell my brethren that I go to your Father and to my Father. We are one and the same. We have the same Father. To my God and your God, we have the same God. My Father and my God are one and the same. Your Father and your God are the same. We are the self. We are not two, Mary. Neither are my brethren separate from us. They are the one self as we. And now because the will has been established to live in God, that will runs to the disciples. Without the will to live in God, the disciples cannot be alerted or awakened. Mary had to come first, and this is now Mary in the midst of the disciples, who must be awakened. Mary in the midst of us must be awakened to awaken the disciples within us. Unless the will of you is established to live in God, the disciples in you will remain asleep. This too is a promise of the Christ which was fulfilled from the 22nd Psalm. We'll just look at it a moment, because it's necessary to know that always every divine promise must be fulfilled. The 22nd Psalm and the 22nd verse. I will declare thy name unto my brethren. In the midst of the congregation will I praise thee. And here in chapter 20, just as in the 22nd Psalm, go to my brethren and say unto them, I ascend unto my Father and our Father, my God and your God. And so the very Christ who spoke the words through David in the psalm now speaks the words to Mary within her own being. And if you have heard words of a similar nature, you have heard the eternal word. Words that unite you with all who have walked in the Spirit throughout all eternity. If you have heard these words within you or similar words, at that moment you were one with every prophet who ever walked the earth. And that oneness has never stopped remaining in oneness. It can never be broken. We are being opened beyond this tomb of a physical form to know that we are not walking in it. The incorporeal Christ was not confined in that tomb, and neither is the incorporeal you. And only through the recognition of the invisible Christ in the garden around you are you accepting life not confined to the body image. That is how we are lifted out far and above and beyond our mortal concepts, out of the limitations of form and time and space. Because I, the Christ of you, I go unto my Father and your Father. This is the divine surgery whereby in the attainment of Christ awareness, you are one with the Father, which is infinity. And that little tomb of a body ceases to be your habitation. This is the new consciousness. It is also the first day of resurrection. And it is still only the morning. We learn through Christ, accepted as invisibly present, as my incorporeal self, I am in the first day of resurrection. The complete teaching of Jesus Christ comes to a pinnacle at this point. For Mary, for those who understand what is happening to Mary, for those who can walk the same path. So Mary goes. She is now entrusted to alert the disciples. Mary Magdalene came and told the disciples she had seen the Lord, that he had spoken these things unto her. Now, to whom could you give this inner experience had it been yours? The only ones she could give it to were the disciples of Christ. It seemed natural for her to do this rather than go out and broadcast to the world. And similarly, when you have been lifted to the point of inner light, there are very few people to whom you can divulge what has happened. Only two disciples of Christ. And even then, only if the inner self has directed you in some way to do this, as it often does. Now it is evening. We can imagine what happened when she arrived and told them what had happened to her. She found them in the upper room of Mark's mother's house. Even Peter was there, who had run home. But now they learn that something has happened. Something beyond their wildest dreams. First, they had learned, probably from Peter, that the Master wasn't there, and they had assumed he had risen. Now they learn that he has spoken to one among them, he has spoken to a woman. Just as, for the first time when he divulged his identity on this earth, it was to a woman at the well of Samaria. She said, "I know when Christ cometh, he will do these things." And he said to the woman of Samaria, "I am he." And now to Mary Magdalene, who has passed the point of the five senses, just as the woman of Samaria had passed the point of the five husbands or the five senses, and was in that in-between stage, transcending the five senses, so Mary Magdalene, in us, reports to the disciples within us, "But I have spoken with him. I have seen him. I have been entrusted to bring you this truth." And the disciples assume that he has risen from the dead. Mary Magdalene has learned that he has not risen from the dead. He has risen from the deadness within her. Now you will find that Christ never changes. When Jesus appears in the garden, or when he appears to the disciples, he's never really appearing. Christ is always present. But as others become more conscious of that presence, he is said to appear to them. And each receives Christ within at a different level of their own awareness. Mary, in her way, and now the disciples find, as they are at in a prayer with the door shut, that this form appears. It was just as present before it appeared through the door or through the wall. It was present in the garden when Peter was at the tomb, but he couldn't see it. The angels he couldn't see. The Christ is present in this room, but you cannot see the Christ unless you are in communion with him. If suddenly the Christ walked through the walls, it would not actually be an event of the Christ walking through the walls. It would be you and I, or someone here, lifted high enough to perceive that Christ which is ever present. And so the symbol of the walls being so thick that no human could walk through, but only the Christ, is a statement that these disciples now, having known that Jesus is actually alive, are in deep inner communion. And when Christ appears, his words are, "Peace be unto you." Their assumption is that Christ is risen from the dead. They still have not caught the inner Christ of their own being is being experienced within themselves. They still see an external Christ coming through a wall. Christ is never external to you. It is impossible for Christ to be external to Christ. But there is sufficient inner awareness now to perceive this incorporeal form. They need no further evidence. They don't say, "Let us touch the wounds." Their visual evidence is enough for them. They're satisfied. This is Jesus Christ. Not Thomas. He's not satisfied. Thomas has to touch. So we see three levels. Mary, who doesn't see him in any way imperfect. The disciples, who still see him as an imperfect form, return to them still as he was, with wounds. They are not yet in the fullness of Christing. They see an imperfect Jesus Christ. There is none. And then a Thomas, who is the lowest level of this inner knowing, who sees but isn't even convinced by seeing. And so he says, "I must feel. I must thrust my hand in his side." These are the various levels that are given to us at this point. What does he say to Thomas? "Blessed are those who can believe without seeing, who don't have to touch the wounds." Now why, if Christ is Christ, does Thomas see the wounds and have to touch them, and the disciples see the wounds and believe that he is resurrected, and Mary see the incorporeal man without wounds? There's no mention of wounds when Mary sees him. It's different levels of awareness to show us that we all see Christ in different ways, but always Christ never changes. Christ never has wounds. But if we see wounds, if Thomas sees wounds, what is he seeing? He's seeing his own consciousness. If the other disciples see wounds, they are seeing their own consciousness. They're not seeing wounds in Christ. They're seeing wounds in their own sense awareness. If you're seeing an earthquake, you're seeing it in your own sense awareness. If you're seeing a disease, you're seeing it in your own sense awareness. The deception of the senses see imperfection where Christ is. And no imperfection can be there. It's never external imperfection. It's always within the visible senses of the beholder. All the diseases on the earth are within the senses of the beholder. The whole world is within our senses. The Christ is never in the world. The Christ is never in our senses. The Christ is never imperfect. And blessed are they who believe without seeing is telling us that when you can accept that the Christ is present and perfect, then you can look through all visible imperfection, which Thomas couldn't do, which the disciples couldn't do, but which Mary could do. You can look through every visible imperfection in your so-called human experience to know that that is but the denial that Christ is present here in the garden. It isn't happening outside your senses. It doesn't matter what imperfection you know. The only place it's happening is within your five physical senses. when your soul is opened, you will perceive that these five physical senses had deceived you into thinking something was present beside the perfect Christ. Christ is revealed as the only presence. There is no other. When Mary finds the Christ, Mary ceases to be. But there's still a Thomas. There are still male disciples to be lifted up. The importance here is that Thomas represents the level of the world today. The highest religious world today believes, as Thomas did, that he rose from the dead. Why? Because the senses of Thomas said so. Thomas was deluded twice, first by the crucifixion and then by the resurrection. Neither had occurred. The world of religion today still thinks Jesus was resurrected. Why? Because, judging from the Bible, Thomas and the others, some 500, saw Jesus resurrected. But what was happening is they were being lifted to perceive that which had never died. And each was seeing it at his own level of consciousness. If they could have all seen him as Mary saw him, they would have known this was never wounded. That was the world illusion. And then we, in knowing that, would know there was never a disease on this earth. That was the world illusion. There was never an evil on this earth. That was the world illusion. There was never a Managua, Nicaragua earthquake. There was no plane came down in the Andes. There were no human corpses eaten by their colleagues. All this is part of seeing the wounds in the side, seeing the print of the nails. This is seeing the evils of the world with our senses and believing they are there. So that Thomas in us, the reasoning, the understanding of the human mind, says, well, I finally saw it, it must be true. Then Thomas gets on his knees and says, my Lord and my God, to the Master. But on a false assumption that the mutilated Christ has now come back in a mutilated form. That's the limit of Thomas, and it's the limit of the religious mind of the world. It's also the limit of the congregations of the religions of the world. But go, tell my brethren that I go to my Father and your Father, not with a mutilated body, as the perfect child of God. And when you have found me in you, you go to your Father, not with a mutilated body, but as the perfect child of God. That going is the acceptance of the now self. We overcome Thomas, we overcome the disciples, we walk with Mary. We are joined into oneness with the invisible self. For us, the Garden of Eden is a reality, for Christ is the only inhabitant. And this earth is Christed in our consciousness. Christ is the only inhabitant. We can look out, no matter what we see, and we judge not. We don't have to feel the wounds of the world. We don't have to see the prints of the nails in the hands of the world. Instead, we learn that when the Master comes, to the disciples, his hands stand for his power. His side stands for his love. They were glad when they saw him, because he showed them his hands and his side, not physically. He showed them his power and his love. They were feeling the power and love of Christ within themselves. When you feel the power and love of Christ within yourself, you have found the hands and the side of Christ. So this is our 20th chapter. I think we can rest with it a moment. What have we learned out of it? If you have reached an important conclusion with yourself, never to deny the God presence where you are, then you're in that will which lingers and will not go back to the old consciousness. The five senses are not revealing the kingdom of God. They're revealing the wounds, the nail prints, the errors, the imperfections that aren't there. They are making Thomas within you reach conclusions that are untrue. On the other hand, if you are true to the presence of God everywhere, then we must be cautious so that in no way are we fooled by the senses in denying that presence. Truth of God as the only self. Now watch how easily you fall out of upholding the presence of God as the only. You judge. And whatever your judgment, big or small, even if it's a good judgment, that judgment breaks the continuity of the one mind. When you judge, you are saying that God is not present. Whatever you judge is unrighteous. The only judgment is righteous judgment, and that judgment is God is present. Now, if God is present, and I judge something to be wrong somewhere, then I am saying that God is not omnipotent, that God is not omniscient, that God is not omnipresent. If I have accepted the newspaper headlines of the day, or the tragedies of the past, or anticipate tragedies of the future, I am judging that God is not present. Because in the presence of God, there can be no tragedy. I am looking at tragedies, and in my consciousness, I am accepting the wounds as real. I'm falling into a trap. There can be no tragedies in the presence of God, and therefore there can be no tragedies in your life. No matter what appears. The illusion is the tragedy. The reality is the invisible presence of God. And although you'd like some sign or something to aid you to make God reveal God before you make the acceptance that God is present, it's the other way around. You must make the acceptance before God can reveal God. unless you're living in the conscious awareness of that presence, there's no way for the presence to reveal itself through you. You can see that Thomas is being shown to us as the opposite of Mary, with the disciples in between. Thomas could not stoop down. He could not permit himself to accept what he personally could not verify. Mary could stoop down. Thomas couldn't have seen two angels. Thomas couldn't see the Christ in the garden. That's why Mary came first, and then the disciples, and then finally Thomas. To uphold the one presence of God as perfect is to know that we are living in perfection now. There is no power to change it. We will see the invisible form of Jesus from one point of view or another. And this body we now see within ourselves, if you see the Christ within yourself, will be from a higher realm than the realm we walk in as human beings. And then later, still another realm. And always the form you see will be but a symbol. For Christ is infinite, and you cannot see an infinite form. You're going to see an image of the infinite form within yourself. You're going to live in the soul senses or human sensation, depending on whether you uphold that only God is present. And if you are fooled by your senses, you will accept that beside God something else is present. And then the meaning of Mary seeing the angels in the tomb, and then outside the tomb, finally seeing the invisible Christ, will be of no value if you still persist in believing what your senses see. Her senses did not see the Christ. It was the absence of those senses which enabled her to see the Christ. It is only when you overcome the belief that you have material senses that you will see the Christ. You cannot have material senses. They are unreal. And all they can report to you is the unreality which they are forced to witness. Our conclusion at this stage should be there is an incorporeal universe and an incorporeal man. Ever present, ever perfect, ever infinite. Peace be unto you. When that is repeated for the third time by Jesus Christ in this chapter, it is a sign that he is coming to the place where he will reveal the fullness of his mission. The third time he says, peace unto you, means I am now reaching and preparing you for a new age. Three is the beginning of completion. And that new age is the incorporeal age of spirit, in which there is only one. And you know yourself to be that one. You never deny it. You never deny its perfection. You do not let the five-sense world fool you into believing that any but the perfect one is present. This may be the first day of resurrection in the Bible, and for those of us who have faithfully found that inner rest out of the world of appearance, out of the world of sense judgment, so that we ourselves are past the point of being judged, for we judge not. And therefore we are not judged. We are not separated from the one who is the only. During our intermission, you might give a moment's thought to what conclusions this experience of the 20th chapter should lead you. What truth can you depend upon if you accept this chapter and the interpretation of it? What truth can you depend upon to live by, so that a new year is actually a new consciousness? That's what we're going to do in the second part of this meeting. And so let's have a little rest now before that. Thank you.